Chapter 11. Mean taken out of the carcass. Pat, do you think of a hiccup, physician? Aunt mentioned them. Ugh. 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 Here His Majesty retched violently. Never tasted but one that rascal Hippocrates. Smelt of a safetida. Ugh. 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 Caught a wretched cold washing him in the Styx, and after all he gave me the cholera morbus. He hiccup wretch, ejaculated Bon Bon, the hiccup, absorption of a pill box. And the philosopher dropped a tear. After all, continued the visitor, after all, if a dev, if a gentleman wishes to live, he must have more talents than one or two, and with us a fat face is an evidence of diplomacy. How so? Hi, we are sometimes exceedingly pushed for provisions. You must know that, in a climate so sultry as mine, it is frequently impossible to keep a spirit alive for more than 2 or 3 hours, and after death, unless pickled immediately, and a pickled spirit is not good, they will smell, you understand, eh? Putrefaction is always to be apprehended, when the souls are consigned to us in the usual way. Hiccup. Hiccup. Good God! How do you manage? Here the iron lamp commenced swinging with redoubled violence, and the devil half started from his seat. However, with a slight sigh, he recovered his composure, merely saying to our hero in a low tone, I tell you what, Pierre Bon Bon, we must have no more swearing. The host swallowed another bumper, by way of denoting thorough comprehension and acquiescence, and the visitor continued. Hi, there are several ways of managing. The most of us starve. Some put up with the pickle. For my part, I purchase my spirit's vivant corpor, in which case I find they keep very well. But the body. Hiccup. The body. He body, the body well, what of the body, oh. Ah. I perceive. Why, sir, the body is not at all affected by the transaction. I have made innumerable purchases of the kind in my day, and the parties never experienced any inconvenience. There were Cain and Nimrod, and Nero, and Caligula, and Dionysius, and Pisistratus, and a thousand others, who never knew what it was to have a soul during the latter part of their lives. Yet, sir, these men adorned society. Why, possession of his faculties, mental and corporeal? Who writes a keener epigram? Who reasons more wittily? Who but stay? I have his agreement in my pocketbook. Thus saying, he produced a red leather wallet, and took from it a number of papers. Upon some of these, Bon Bon caught a glimpse of the letters Machi Mazarabist with the words Caligula, George, Elizabeth. His Majesty selected a narrow slip of parchment, and from it read aloud the following words. In consideration of certain mental endowments which it is unnecessary to specify, and in further consideration of 1,000 Louis d'Or, I being aged 1 year and 1 month, do hereby make over to the bearer of this agreement all my right, title, and appurtenance in the shadow called my soul. Signed, A. *4. Here His Majesty repeated a name which I did not feel justified in indicating more unequivocally. *4. Quereerout? Clever fellow that, resumed he. But like you, Monsieur Bon Bon, he was mistaken about the soul. The soul a shadow, truly. The soul a shadow. Ha, ha, ha. He. Who. Only think of a fricasseed shadow. Why think, hiccup, of a fricasseed shadow? Exclaimed our hero, whose faculties were becoming much illuminated by the profundity of His Majesty's discourse. Why think of a hiccup, fricasseed shadow now, damn. Hiccup. Humph. If I would have been such a hiccup. Nincompoop. My soul, Mr. Humph. Our soul, Monsieur Bon Bon? S. Sir Hiccup, my soul is at, sir. Oh, shadow, damn. Did you mean to say, S. Sir, my soul is hiccup? Humph. Yes, sir. Did you not intend to assert, why soul is hiccup, peculiarly qualified for hiccup? A. Hat, sir. 2. A. Alpha Lee. H. Fricassee. Indeed. A goat and fricando and see here, my good fellow. I'll let you have a hiccup. A bargain. Here the philosopher slapped his majesty upon the back. Old think of such a thing, said the latter calmly, at the same time rising from his seat. The metaphysician stared. M supplied at present, said his majesty. Hiccupy H, said the philosopher. Ave no funds on hand. Hat? Besides, very unhandsome in me, Oh, take advantage of, hiccup, our present disgusting and ungentlemanly situation. Here the visitor bowed, and withdrew in what manner could not precisely be ascertained, but in a well-concerted effort to discharge a bottle at a villain, the slender chain was severed, that depended from the ceiling, and the metaphysician prostrated by the downfall of the lamp. Tilde 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 end of text tilde 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 equals 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 some words with a mummy. The symposium of the preceding evening had been a little too much for my nerves. I had a wretched headache, and was desperately drowsy. Instead of going out therefore, to spend the evening as I had proposed, it occurred to me that I could not do a wiser thing than just eat a mouthful of supper, and go immediately to bed. A light supper, of course. I am exceedingly fond of Welsh rabbit. More than a pound at once, however, may not at all times be advisable. Still, there can be no material objection to two. And really between two and three, there is merely a single unit of difference. I ventured, perhaps, upon four. My wife will have it five. But, clearly, as he has confounded two very distinct affairs. The abstract number, 5, I am willing to admit, but, concretely, it has reference to bottles of brown stout, without which, in the way of condiment, Welsh rabbit is to be eschewed. Having thus concluded a frugal meal, and donned my nightcap, with the serene hope of enjoying it till noon the next day, I placed my head upon the pillow, and, through the aid of a capital conscience, fell into a profound slumber forthwith. But when were the hopes of humanity fulfilled? I could not have completed my third snore, when there came a furious ringing at the street doorbell, and then an impatient thumping at the knocker, which awakened me at once. In a minute afterward, and while I was still rubbing my eyes, my wife thrust in my face a note, from my old friend, Dr. Poninger. It ran thus. Home to me, by all means, my dear good friend, as soon as you receive this. Come and help us to rejoice. At last, by long persevering diplomacy, I have gained the assent of the directors of the City Museum, to my examination of the mummy, you know the one I mean. I have permission to unswathe it and open it, if desirable. A few friends only will be present, you, of course. The mummy is now at my house, and we shall begin to unroll it at 11 tonight. Ours, ever, Poninger. By the time I had reached the Poninger, it struck me that I was as wide awake as a man need be. I leaped out of bed in an ecstasy, overthrowing all in my way, dressed myself with a rapidity truly marvelous, and set off, at the top of my speed, for the doctor's. There I found a very eager company assembled. They had been awaiting me with much impatience. The mummy was extended upon the dining table, and the moment I entered its examination was commenced. It was one of a pair brought, several years previously, by Captain Arthur Sabretash, a cousin of Poninger's from a tomb near Lethias, in the Libyan mountains, a considerable distance above Thebes on the Nile. The grottoes at this point, although less magnificent than the Theban sepulchres, are of higher interest, on account of affording more numerous illustrations of the private life of the Egyptians. The chamber from which our specimen was taken, was said to be very rich in such illustrations, the walls being completely covered with fresco paintings and bas-reliefs, while statues, vases, and mosaic work of rich patterns, indicated the vast wealth of the deceased. The treasure had been deposited in the museum precisely in the same condition in which Captain Sabretash had found it, that is to say, the coffin had not been disturbed. For 8 years it had thus stood, subject only externally to public inspection. We had now, therefore, the complete mummy at our disposal, and to those who are aware how very rarely the unransacked antique reaches our shores, it will be evident at once that we had great reason to congratulate ourselves upon our good fortune. Approaching the table, I saw on it a large box, or case, nearly 7 feet long, and perhaps 3 feet wide, by 2 feet and a half deep. It was oblong, not coffin-shaped. The material was at first supposed to be the wood of the sycamore, platinus, but, upon cutting into it, we found it to be pasteboard, or, more properly, papier mache, composed of papyrus. It was thickly ornamented with paintings, representing funeral scenes, and other mournful subjects interspersed among which, in every variety of position, were certain series of hieroglyphical characters, intended, no doubt, for the name of the departed. By good luck, Mr. Glidden formed one of our party, and he had no difficulty in translating the letters, which were simply phonetic, and represented the word Lamistakio. We had some difficulty in getting this case open without injury, but having at length accomplished the task, we came to a second, coffin-shaped, and very considerably less in size than the exterior one, but resembling it precisely in every other respect. The interval between the two was filled with resin, which had, in some degree, defaced the colors of the interior box. Upon opening this latter, which we did quite easily, we arrived at a third case, also coffin-shaped, and varying from the second one in no particular, except in that of its material, which was cedar, and still emitted the peculiar and highly aromatic odor of that wood. Between the second and the third case there was no interval, the one fitting accurately within the other. Removing the third case, we discovered and took out the body itself. We had expected to find it, as usual, enveloped in frequent rolls, or bandages, of linen, but, in place of these, we found a sort of sheath, made of papyrus, and coated with a layer of plaster, thickly gilt and painted. The paintings represented subjects connected with the various supposed duties of the soul, and its presentation to different divinities, with numerous identical human figures, intended, very probably, as portraits of the persons embalmed. Extending from head to foot was a columnar, or perpendicular, inscription, in phonetic hieroglyphics, giving again his name and titles, and the names and titles of his relations. Around the neck thus enshrined was a collar of cylindrical glass beads, diverse in color, and so arranged as to form images of deities, of the Scarabaeus, etc., with the winged globe. Around the small of the waist was a similar collar or belt. Stripping off the papyrus, we found the flesh in excellent preservation, with no perceptible odor. The color was reddish. The skin was hard, smooth, and glossy. The teeth and hair were in good condition. The eyes, it seemed, had been removed, and glass ones substituted, which were very beautiful and wonderfully lifelike, with the exception of somewhat too determined a stare. The fingers and the nails were brilliantly gilded. Mr. Glidden was of opinion, from the redness of the epidermis, that the embalmment had been effected altogether by asphaltum. But, on scraping the surface with a steel instrument, and throwing into the fire some of the powder thus obtained, the flavor of camphor and other sweet-scented gums became apparent. We searched the corpse very carefully for the usual openings through which the entrails are extracted, but, to our surprise, we could discover none. No member of the party was at that period aware that entire unopened mummies are not infrequently met. The brain it was customary to withdraw through the nose, the intestines through an incision in the side. The body was then shaved, washed, and salted, then laid aside for several weeks, when the operation of embalming, properly so called, began. As no trace of an opening could be found, Dr. Poninger was preparing his instruments for dissection, when I observed that it was then past 2 o'clock. Hereupon it was agreed to postpone the internal examination until the next evening, and we were about to separate for the present, when someone suggested an experiment or two with the voltaic pile. The application of electricity to a mummy 3,000 or 4,000 years old at the least, was an idea, if not very sage, still sufficiently original, and we all caught it at once. About 1/10 in earnest and 9/10 in jest, we arranged a battery in the doctor's study, and conveyed thither the Egyptian. It was only after much trouble, that we succeeded in laying bare some portions of the temporal muscle which appeared of less stony rigidity than other parts of the frame, but which, as we had anticipated, of course, gave no indication of galvanic susceptibility, when brought in contact with the wire. This, the first trial, indeed, seemed decisive, and, with a hearty laugh at our own absurdity, we were bidding each other good night, when my eyes, happening to fall upon those of the mummy, were there immediately riveted in amazement. My brief glance, in fact, had sufficed to assure me that the orbs which we had all supposed to be glass, and which were originally noticeable for a certain wild stare, were now so far covered by the lids, that only a small portion of the tunica albuginea remained visible. With a shout I called attention to the fact, and it became immediately Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.